In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games. And when the world looks up and shouts, save us, I'll look down and whisper, let me get to this checkpoint and save my game first.
I'm Kelly Lawler. I watch television. And when the world looks up and shouts, save us, I'll look down and whisper, I'm getting my dog. Hold on a sec.
If this is your first time listening, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. If you happen to be on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could write a quick review about the show. By doing that, you'll help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a bonus, we give you a shout out on the next episode. So try it out. We get great feedback, and you get some love on the next episode. Everybody wins. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. Quick shout out to one of our listeners, Harris, who said, loving to listen to this podcast. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Again, you can hit us up there, too, and we'll respond. And you can also email us as well, mothershippod@usatoday.com. And speaking of Twitter, we are hosting a special Halloween competition. Basically, what we want you to do is tweet us pics of your best nerdy Halloween costumes. The winner of this will be announced in the podcast the week of Halloween, and then they will get to choose a future topic of a Mothership episode.
Appropriate.
Appropriate topic, please, okay? We are still going to vet these and have the right to say yes or no, depending on what you pick. But pick something appropriate, pick something fun, and it will be the topic that we use for a future episode of the Mothership. So get that started now, and like I said, we will have a winner the week of Halloween. So have fun. Can't wait to see all the fun costumes that everybody comes up with. Now let's get to the main topic. Here's a clip.
There are people who believe that this world is fair and good. It's all lollipops and rainbows. We don't do lollipops and rainbows. We know those are pretty colors that just hide what the world really is. Black and white.
Soon thou shalt save us. And we will whisper.
That was from HBO's Watchmen TV series, debuting on the premium cable network Sunday at 9 o'clock Eastern. It is loosely inspired by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' seminal comic series that ran in the 80s and is now sold as a graphic novel that many call one of the best books of the 20th century. The original version took place in an alternate 1980s where costume superheroes had been part of American society for decades. And because of them, the U.S. was able to win the Vietnam War. Lots of other things happened then. Presidential term limits were eliminated, so Richard Nixon is still president, and nuclear tensions with the Soviet Union are very high. During the series, one retired costume superhero is murdered. A group of others join together to figure out what happened, and there's a lot of violence, a lot of philosophy and sociopolitical theory. There's also a giant squid.
Woohoo!
There's also the fun little side pirate thing that's happening, too, as this is all going on. The Watchmen was adapted into film in 2009, directed by Zack Snyder.
He's knocking.
Yeah, is there a director's cut? It was, obviously it stuck really, really close to the source material, but it also, there was a key plot point that he veered away from, and so it was, yeah. It was a commercial and critical failure, and in the shadow of that, when HBO secured the rights and asked Lost and Leftovers creator Damon Lindelof to adapt it, he chose to make a 2019 set sequel to the original graphic novel without really focusing too much on the existing material. I mean, it's very much an original kind of Watchmen story. So it's kind of similar to the current Star Wars trilogy where you get some old characters that you've seen from the graphic novel and then you got some new tone themes, new characters. Kelly has seen 6 episodes so far. This is a 9-episode first season.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? What is this version of Watchmen about?
So everything in the graphic novel, so not the DC Comics continuation and prequels, so the original Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons book, is canon. So like that all happened in history, including the giant squid. You're all very, very welcome. The giant squid is notoriously what was left out of the Zack Snyder adaptation. And the giant squid is incredibly important to the ethos of Watchmen. So Richard Nixon was president for a long time until he was ousted by Robert Redford in 1992. And Linda Lofton just make that up. That was like in the book as like who could succeed Nixon. So Robert Redford has been president since 1992. The heroes are outlawed like they were in the original comic. The sort of after effects of the squid incident in New York, it's like called 11-2, like we call 9-11. There are random squid rainstorms all the time, like baby squids fall from the sky all over the country. I think the world, actually. And Dr. Manhattan's on Mars. Rorschach's dead. The two original characters that are most relevant to the new TV series are Laurie Silk Spectre, who's played by Jean Smart, and Adrian Veidt / Ozymandias, who's played by Jeremy Irons. But then there's a lot of new characters. It takes place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where police officers wear masks because there is a white supremacist terrorist group known as the 7th Cavalry, with a K, obviously,
yep.
Who coordinated a terrorist attack against police because there was a racial reparations bill that let victims of violence against Black people, not necessarily slavery reparations, although that maybe could come in episodes I haven't seen, but like they specifically reference the race massacre of 1921 in Tulsa, where the Klan and other white people destroyed what was known as Black Wall Street. It was like one of the most prosperous Black communities in the country, and essentially burned it to the ground and killed, the historical estimates now are up to 300 people. So angry that the police is enforcing the racial reparations law, this white supremacist terrorist group attacks police in their homes and kills like almost the entire police force like in their beds on Christmas Eve. So then they pass a new law that says police can wear masks to protect their identities. And so a lot of the police officers, especially like the detectives and the captains and stuff, wear costumes akin to a superhero and take on monikers because no one has real names in the police force. Most of like the officer levels wear a yellow mask that covers their neck through the top of their nose. So Regina King is the protagonist of the series, and she plays a detective named Angela Abar, who also goes by Sister Knight, and she wears this very nun-inspired costume when she's on duty. Then there's also Tim Blake Nelson, who plays a cop known as Looking Glass. Don Johnson plays the chief of police, and they investigate, I won't spoil exactly who dies, but someone on the police force, a white person, is lynched, and they suspect the white supremacist group. And Angela is investigating that murder while sort of the bigger conflict between the white supremacist terrorist group and the police is sort of the overarching political story. It's a lot.
It feels like a lot, but it also, the thing that jumps out, does it feel like Watchmen? Does it capture that tone that we've seen from the graphic novel and maybe to a small degree the movie?
So by episode 3, it starts to feel like Watchmen, and not just because that is when Laurie is introduced. By the way, hands down, Jean Smart is the absolute best part of this whole series. She is so good. And honestly, I think it's one of her best performances ever. And she has a long, celebrated career.
I was going to say, that's a very big compliment.
It is. I mean, she is just so perfectly cast as sort of like this older, jaded, tired Laurie, who's now an FBI agent in the like vigilante division, arresting people trying to be superheroes still. And she eventually gets called to Tulsa because she's just like so great to look into the lynching. But right, once she gets introduced, it starts to feel a little more like Watchmen. And I think part of the reason is because they shift it into the sort of same narrative pattern that was in the original book, which was this murder and then also a bigger sociopolitical story. And the characters get really deep by that point. She walks in fully formed. It takes the new characters a little bit longer to resonate. And also they start doing it more episodically. So the first two episodes feel very much like standard, serialized, a little all over the place prestige TV. And then she walks in and she has an episode about her. And then it follows up with an episode about Tim Blake Nelson's character. And it starts to feel a little more like Lost, a little more flashback heavy, a little more character driven. And it really picks up. And they also introduce Hong Chow, who was in Downsizing, as this incredibly eccentric trillionaire, not a billionaire. And Louis Gossett Jr. plays this very mysterious old man who's like connected to the lynching, connected to various other heroes and politicians and stuff in a mysterious way. And what will be most controversial is one of the original characters, I will not say which one, gets a new, very compelling backstory that I can assure you Alan Moore never would have thought of.
Interesting. Okay.
I would love to talk extensively about it when that episode airs. It is episode 6, so I have a while to wait.
Getting deep into spoiler territory
Getting
at that point.
Deep into spoiler town. Spoiler town!
Yeah.
Brian's not here, so I have to do it for him. So yeah, it does feel like Watchmen eventually. The first episode, which they screened at New York Comic Con, and I saw over the summer before a panel about it at TCA, was very worrisome and hard to parse because of the racial dynamics. Because essentially, it pitted white supremacists against the police, which is not really how it works in American society now. And in particular, Eric Deggans, who is the TV critic for NPR, and he is a black man, really pushed Damon Lindelof on this subject. And Damon was like, I really want you to see the whole thing before you come and judge me on this. And so that is one of the reasons, like me watching it, I gave it a little more time. And it does, I will say, that it does course correct that a little bit with some twists, although it still feels a little bit like, which I saw criticism of it on Twitter from Charles Pulliam, who is another black critic who writes a lot for io9, that it's still sort of making you root for the police, which is a kind of troubling when you're looking at like race relations and police, where it's sort of a different binary.
Yeah, the dynamic is very different.
The dynamic is very different in current American society. Yes. So that is like hard. And like there are 3 episodes left. And Damon said the whole season, but as is 6 episodes in, I don't know what the message is other than racism is bad. And most of our institutions, however well-intentioned they are built on a primarily racist history. And that's like a bad moral. It's just like there's, for instance, so much like violence against black people. Like there's this one scene where they flash back to the Tulsa massacre and you see this like 8-year-old black boy holding a dead black baby.
Wow.
And it's in the first scene in the first episode. And it was just like, I was like, that's a lot. That's a lot. And they keep flashing back to the massacre. A lot of people get like there's a lot of violence in the like the present day and various murders. And so I was just like, do we need to show that much like pain and suffering of a, you know, a minority group that has a long history of that in order to like say racism is bad?
Yes. I see what you're saying.
So I don't know. I mean, this is one of the shows where I would love to hear so much from people with a really diverse group of backgrounds to see what they think. And I might be wrong. Like, there's lots I could be wrong about. There's lots that the Damon, who is a white man, could be wrong about. So, Damon, my best friend, Lindelof.
So, how are some of the new characters in the show? I think that got me excited. I was a little hesitant with Watchmen, but one thing that I was excited about was Regina King being on the show.
Oh my God, she's so good. I mean, she's just fantastic. She is great at the physical stuff. She's very intimidating, which you don't maybe expect from her. She ends up playing a lot of maternal roles. That's what she won her Oscar for If Bill Street Could Talk. If you think back to like American Crime, 7 Seconds, she's played a lot of harried mothers. And she is a mother in this, but that's not like her purpose. She is this like very well-respected kind of violent police detective who has her own skepticism about the police force and like sort of she does her own investigation of the lynching, and that kind of puts her in conflict with Lori, who is like sent from the FBI to like be in charge of the whole thing officially. And Lori doesn't trust her. And there are just a couple amazing scenes between the two of them. They're just like, I could watch that the whole time. That if that was the whole show, just like the two of them doing stuff and particularly being in conflict with each other, that'd be awesome. And Regina King is a really great, like, audience surrogate to, like, come into this world. So you see, the first episode does do a really good job of introducing you to the world very succinctly by sort of following her through a day. So she, like, has a fake job as a baker, which she, like, goes to her son's school to, like, do a career day presentation about. And then she goes and she gets in her badass uniform and then goes to investigate police things. So she's amazing. Tim Blake Nelson is so good as well. And he gets one of, like, his episode is such a great episode of TV, start to finish, with a really great arc. He plays another police officer who is very traumatized from the squid attack. If you remember from the comics, the squid, in addition to just, like, killing people by being a giant squid that, like, dropped on Manhattan, also had psychological effects that hit people in New York and around. So it's a really cool little character study that he gets that feels so vintage Lost. It was so much fun. And Hong Chau doesn't come in until a bit through, but she's great. And I don't know if you saw Homecoming last year, which was the Amazon Julia Roberts series. Hong Chau was in that very briefly. And this character honestly feels like her character from Homecoming, but like a full character. Like in Homecoming, she's completely underutilized, but she's playing this very similar corporate, super smart, super intimidating, though she's like a small woman. And she's great. So yeah, I really liked it. I really felt like when it was focusing on these characters, both old and new, it was really shining.
So one character, we talked about Jean Smart and Laurie's character, but also Ozymandias is here with Jeremy Irons playing that role. First off, how does the character fit in, but how's Jeremy Irons as that character?
So it's like really hard to say. You see him in the pilot. That's all I'll feel comfortable talking about. He is very removed from everyone else. He looks like he's living in seclusion, a wealthy, wealthy seclusion. So that's all I feel comfortable saying. But even before he like uttered a single line, Jeremy Irons is so perfect in that role. If you remember Ozymandias from the comic, he is the smartest man on the planet and like very cold and calculating and like a incredibly wealthy and like a upper crust kind of guy. So like thinking of Jeremy Irons and his quintessential Britishness and his like old, you see it as like Ozymandias has aged so well and so dignifiedly. That's an adjective now. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, an adverb. Excuse me. Wow. Grammar's hard. I'm a writer.
It's going in the dictionary next year, probably.
Good.
Yeah. Obviously, there's been a debate among fans about whether we should even have this series. I know Alan Moore was never a big fan of the movies. And I think if I remember right, he was even like speaking out recently about just the graphic novel in general, like his just feelings about it.
Alan Moore does not want any of his work, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, anything,
yeah,
to be adapted to the screen. He has been very vocal about that his entire career. He had his name removed from the Zack Snyder film, and I don't know if this was like a reports thing or like it was ever officially reported, so take this with a grain of salt, but I believe he had his royalties sent to Dave Gibbons, who was the artist. So Damon Lindelof has said that he like tried to reach out to Alan Moore to no avail. I mean, he just doesn't want it. He just doesn't think it should be done again and done in a different medium. And he said stuff to the effect of like the fact that in, especially with Watchmen, as you go through it on the page, you can go at your own pace. It's very disturbing. There's violence and sexual violence and ideas about humanity that are disturbing. And he sort of like, you're not force-fed it. And when you put that on the screen, you have to be force-fed it. And in order to make it palatable, the filmmakers have to temper it. And that's what he doesn't like. Lindelof has apologized. A year ago, he wrote this like Instagram novel apologizing for making it at all. And I personally think he's kind of a masochist for doing it. I mean, maybe the money's amazing. I mean, it's probably really good money. And like, but seriously, after all of he's been through with fans, God bless him. I hope he's doing well. But yeah, I mean, if it was going to be adapted, I do see this, the strategy that they picked, this like legacy quill, to quote friend of the podcast, Mike Ryan of Uproxx, who coined that term for a long in the future sequel with some of the old stuff and a lot of new stuff and the same world and tone, of which Star Wars The Force Awakens is the best example. If they were going to do it, this was the only way they could do it satisfactorily. they just need to stick the landing of these three episodes, man. I am so worried about it. I wish they had sent me all nine. A little birdie sources tell me that Damon likes to tinker, so I think maybe the last three aren't done, which is probably why they weren't sent. Like, tinker, like, right up until air.
So we don't know if we're going to get a second season of Watchmen, and I think Lindelof and HBO have said they're kind of waiting for the response to the series before they decide if they're going to try it again. Based on what you've seen, do you feel like you want a second season of this?
Okay, honestly, I was like on the fence about that until the sixth episode, which was really so stunning and opened up a new door for the series. It still has to stick a landing that I think that resolves some of its political messaging and then also creates new storytelling opportunities that don't just repeat what it's already done. So I think if they can come up with a good story, if they can finish it well, and then they can come up with a real story for season two, I think they could keep going with it. Like, I think about my fave Fleabag. Phoebe Waller-Bridge had talked about how the only reason she was able to do a season two was that she had to come up with a reason for Fleabag to talk to the audience again. At the end of season one, Fleabag kind of is ashamed and walks and doesn't want to talk to the audience. And then she came up with the hot priest, and that was the germ of the idea for season two. So I think they need the germ of the idea to make it work and not just this went well, let's keep going.
So, okay, this gets to my next bigger question, because Game of Thrones is over. I feel like Succession has kind of been the HBO series of the moment right now from everything
just in the media world a bit.
That, yeah.
The ratings are not there.
Yeah. Does Watchmen have that potential to be the show that could be Game of Thronesy, or what would it have to do to get there?
There's never going to be a Game of Thrones again. We're never going to have a show that is that popular and culturally dominating forever. And I can tell you this 100% for a bunch of different reasons, but and not just that Apple Plus and Disney Plus are starting in the next few weeks. Oh my God, I'm going to die. But I can tell you that HBO even knows this, because they're debuting also potential Game of Thrones type series, His Dark Materials, based on the Philip Pullman trilogy, on November 4th. They wouldn't run Game of Thrones and The Sopranos at the same time in years past. So, no, I don't think it's going to be a Game of Thrones replacement. I think it could do nothing, honestly. I think it will probably do fine for them. I don't think it will do amazing. I do think there is a world where it completely bombs, just because it's a hard sell to the super fans and complicated to the newbies.
It's kind of in a weird middle.
It is in a really weird middle. I think it is in a smart middle, but other people have to think the same.
Okay. Listeners, it's your turn. Are you going to watch HBO's Watchmen? Did you read the original Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons graphic novel? Have you seen the Snyder film?
Oh, I hear him. He's knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Hi, Zach. So sorry.
Sorry.
You know it was bad, though. You should have put the squid in it.
Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod, or you can tweet at us directly. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
And I'm at K-Lawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
Don't forget, you can send us an email too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. That'll wrap it up here. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producers of the Mothership this week, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd, the Watch Women of the Mothership. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to the Mothership for free. While you're there, how about you leave us a rating or review? It helps other people find the pod, and we get great feedback. If Apple Podcasts isn't your jam, you can also find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you listen to a podcast. We'll be there.
And don't forget our costume contest on Twitter. Send us your best movie costumes. We will judge you. We will love you. And then you might get to pick a future episode topic.
Yes. It's going to be wonderful. I can't wait to see all the costumes. All right, but that'll do it. Until next week, nerds out.
Later.